When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You asked for it. Here it is. It's a podcast from Apathetic Enthusiasm.
In this episode, we talk about running a lot and jury duty and possible writer strikes. It's Apathetic Enthusiasm.
Oh, I did not do any research on that last one.
This is fine.
This is shit. Welcome to Apathetic Enthusiasm, everybody. I am Brandon. That over there on the other side of the vocal range, like we're not that far away, is Travis. Hey, Travis, how are you doing?
Oh, hi. Hi, Brandon.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good. You look good.
All things considered, I'm doing great.
You look great.
Yeah.
You look great.
Yeah.
You look good. You sound good. Your levels are pretty much matched with mine, and that's pretty good. Thank you.
And that's all we can really ask for here on the podcast. That's all we ever wanted.
For our Twitch stream. Okay. Welcome to the show. There's a few ways you can hit us up. You can go to the Twitter at Apathusiast. I'm at Barnyard Cruise. He's at Juggle Mino. Apathetic Enthusiasm Show at gmail.com, Facebook, Instagram. Look, we're the only people with the name Apathetic Enthusiasm. So if you just Google that and use the plus sign and then add social media, I guarantee you will find us in some way, shape, or form.
You can hang out, be part of the show, especially on Monday nights if you go to twitch.tv/apatheticenthusiasm. Big hello to everybody hanging out in the chat right now. And then finally, you can support the show and all of our podcast endeavors over at patreon.com/apatheticenthusiasm. That's the business. That's the business side. Now it's all fun. Business is done. Mm-hmm. Now it's time for fun. Brandon, how was your weekend? Did you do anything out of the ordinary?
My weekend was pretty good. I will admit my weekend was pretty good. I went to, I work 4 hours. No, strike that, reverse it. I work 10-hour days.
4 hours. Four grueling hours.
I work 10-hour days.
That's it.
4 days a week, and then I have Friday off. I have every Friday off. And so
I'm at work for 40 hours, but I work for 4 hours.
And maybe that's an exaggeration. But so Friday, I went ahead. I started on my campaign, or one shot for some D&D action. So getting that. Put together, I feel pretty good about it. Pretty excited about it. I sent to everybody some preparation work over the weekend as well. Hung out with my parents, had lunch downtown, and then Saturday went to my old stomping grounds in La Crescenta. There was like a car show type thing, and so my mom and dad went down there. But also, I got to see Mr. Matt Sizemore's parents, old Bess's parents. So John D. Sizemore was there with his Mustang, his bitchin' Mustang, which he's selling, which I can't buy because Matt will be mad at me. You're like, no, that's my car. That's my legacy car. But it's a stick shift, and Matt doesn't know how to use a clutch. And so...
Oh, that's a key bit of Sizemore lore that you only get here on the podcast.
That's all I get. So I got to see John, got to see Matt's mom, Linda, and his brother Ross. And so they're like family to me. I've known them for a long time. So it was really, really good seeing them. And then Sunday, do some more D&D prep, just hanging out. I released a new It's on Random. So that's out there on the Patreon. Which, by the way, if you care, we have a Patreon and we have stuff there. And then I ran 6 miles.
Sounds like a good productive weekend.
I ran
lots of fun.
I ran 6 miles on Saturday. which I dare anybody on this podcast to beat.
All right. Well, sounds good.
I dare anybody.
I dare anybody. Well, I might have beat that by a few miles this weekend.
Yeah, so. We'll see.
I don't know. The jury's still out on how much running I actually did. Yeah. So as the title suggests, I ran the marathon that we've been talking about for way too long on this podcast this weekend.
For sure. Way too long.
I finished it. That's it. That's a story. I don't know what you guys want to talk about.
I mean, we've talked so much about doing running in the last, you know, basically like couple months, because you've been doing this marathon prep. So I don't care about like the prep anymore. All I care about is 26 whatever miles. It's
26.2.
It's a long ways.
Let's not get it twisted.
It's a long ways. We won't harp on this for too long, but what is the most challenging thing about 26.2 miles?
Geez. For me, I would have to say it was the running. That part was tough. No, I mean, we did talk about prep a lot. Before we get into the challenging bit.
That was my question, though. I don't care about the rest of it.
Okay, we'll talk about the challenging bit. The challenging bit for me was the last 6 miles. And I think something I've learned about myself is the mental aspect of running is just as important as the physical aspect in a lot of ways. And I think I've realized about myself that there is a little bit of a mental barrier or block when tackling new distances. So to dip back into the prep a little bit, the training plan that I was using maxed out on a 20-mile run 2 weeks before the actual marathon event. And from what I've seen, that's kind of typical for a lot of training plans, is to get up to 20 miles and then you go out and you do the 26.2, which is a full 10K.
Extra.
Tacked on to the farthest distance that you've ever run in your life, potentially, if you're in my shoes, right? So I think as I was doing those long runs, what tended to be the case is I've run half marathons before. I've done two of those like 10 years ago. And the first run for this training that was past a half marathon was a 15-mile run. And the last 2 miles of that 15-mile run for me were really difficult. I was walking more. I was like having to stop. And it wasn't that much more than the 13 miles I had done previously. But I think the mental idea of running that extra distance, that distance that I haven't traveled before, was difficult. And every 2 weeks, as I was training and adding those distances, almost every time as I entered into the portion of the run that was new to me. So for the 18 mile, it was around the 15 mile marker that it started to get really hard. And in the 20 miler, it was after about 18 miles that I was having to walk a little bit more and struggled. I think that was like a legitimate test for me, because during the marathon, after about 20 miles, is when I really started to feel the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So the only way to test this theory is to go out and run another marathon. And then I'll know whether or not it was only because it was the first time that I had done it.
You haven't signed up for another one, have you?
I haven't. No, okay. It's only been about 36 hours since I finished the last marathon. So I'll give it a little bit more time. I'll let the legs heal a little bit more before I sign up. But I would be lying if I had said I haven't already gone to the event's website and looked at next year's stuff.
Yeah.
That would be a lie, because I definitely have been on the website again.
Well, the Space Force has a 10 miler over in over at Cape Canaveral. And so I already kind of joked with my buddies that I'm like, I guess maybe this year I will run that. I don't know. I haven't run a marathon. The most I've run is now, I guess the 10 miler still is the longest I've run, but
yeah.
You know, like, I don't know, like I want to do another one clearly. So, I'll get after it.
Well, you signed up for a half, right?
Yeah.
Like officially you did, like you put money on the table.
Yeah. I put money on the table and everything. But the way I figure it is even if I don't run the whole thing, right? Like it doesn't, I have 4 hours to run. Yeah, 13.1 miles.
You can practically walk it in that time.
I really can. But you know, similar to you, like as far like you talking about like running and then hitting that wall and then being like, oh, now this is a new distance. I'm like kind of weirdly, I don't want to say the opposite, but like at the start of the run, I'm like, this run's gonna be so long, and my legs are very, very tight, and I don't warm up properly, and so like I ran this 6 miles on Saturday, and the first 2 miles. Like everything was sore down there and my like super tight. And like I had to stop and like stretch maybe every quarter mile and walk a little bit. But then something switched. And then I was like, I'm good with running all of the rest of the way. It was yeah. Very, very strange. So I think I do need to warm up more. But yeah, so half marathon.
Well, and I think that's the thing for me is I feel like I ran the first almost 2/3 of this marathon a little too fast. A little like because I felt really good for that portion of it, right? Like obviously like there the excitement and emotion around an event like this adds to some adrenaline, yeah, right? There were 19,000 sure. people
oh my god
and signed you, up and you, for this event
and you placed in the top 19,000.
Just shy. Across all different races, I think there were, because there was a 5K and then the half, the full, as well as a relay. But in terms of the race, the race that I ran was the Oklahoma City Memorial Marathon. It's a race that is the largest fundraiser for the Oklahoma City bombing memorial. And it is, this is my third time running in some form of the event, and it is a very special event because they call it the Run to Remember. It's in honor of those that died in the Oklahoma City bombing. The start is very emotional. They do like 168 seconds of silence for all of like 1 second for each person that died. So there's a lot of like emotion tied to that. There are signs with the names of people that were lost. There's people running with like special bibs on that say running in remembrance, yeah. And they have different people's names on it. So like all of that makes it a lot more emotional than just, hey, I signed up for the 10K turkey trot, you know, or what, you know, whatever it was, right? Like, no offense to any turkey trotters out there.
No offense to any turkey trotters. Yeah, no, I get,
and there's just, yeah,
I totally get that. You know, the same thing for me for this half marathon that is taking place basically down the street from me, starting at the duck pond, and is running through the same wash that I run through all the time. Anyway, it has that emotional significance,
same emotional energy. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, it does
for sure. But so that yeah. thing is going to be. Like thing is, it's gonna be fun. I still have to pick up my mileage a little bit, and like that's gonna be like a, like the summer is coming up, is like gonna be so much traveling anyway. Like so that half marathon is like on the 25th, and then that week, talking about like Air Force and Space Force stuff. Like I have two friends that are retiring that I'm gonna go on a like I'm gonna go up to see them. They're at Fort Meade, and so like. See their retirement ceremonies, and then I'm going to hop on a plane that like that same night and then come back to LAX so I can go to New Mexico for 4th of July. It's going to be fantastic. It's going to be a blast.
It's going to be great.
And that's like,
so you have
so much travel.
You have going like on. Just over a month and a half, almost two.
Yeah.
To train for this then.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think,
okay.
I think we're like going to do like a weekend in Anaheim too. It's like,
just bring your shoes.
I'll run around Disneyland. If it's great. If the dragon hasn't burnt it down yet.
They will rebuild her.
Well, anyways,
have the technology.
Yes. Let's we're done talking about running now. We'll never talk about it again. And
we will never talk about it again. Yeah.
Time to segue into
we have one other fitness related thing.
Oh yeah, that's right. Into. That's right. Yeah, that's a good segue.
Literally the day after the marathon May started, and Brandon had sent me a challenge. It's actually like it is a fundraiser, right, for St. Jude. If you sign up and you can register, I think. If you want to do that, go check out St. Jude's website. Not a sponsor, but we are officially not associated with this event in any way. Yeah. The main thing we're associated with is the challenge of doing 3,000 push-ups.
That's right.
In the month of May. So, Brandon, I don't know if you sent this to me as a bit or not, or like if you were not expecting to actually do it, but I was in the tail end of a marathon training program where I was like, heck yes, let's do hard things. So 3,000 push-ups in the month of May averages out to about 100 push-ups a day.
Easy.
Give or take. There's 31 days in May, so you get a little bit of cushion. But I sent you a spreadsheet today on a shared account that had every day of the month listed and then a place for us to track our push-ups.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And we started today.
Doing pretty
Both
good.
Both of us are at 100 push-ups right now.
Right now. We can stop this show right now and do a couple more. Get ahead of the curve for tomorrow.
I think we could. I think my arms feel okay.
My arms don't. I'll tell you the last time I've done push-ups. It was the summer before COVID started. That's basically the last time I've done push-ups. And I started strong today, right? And again, this is the support St. Jude. Like, we're not actually supporting him. We're just doing the push-ups just as maybe an act of solidarity. And it wasn't a bit. It wasn't a bit. Like, I've always, St. Jude is always the charity that I gave to because, like, I care about the kids. Like, kids are our future, and we need to have them for a future. So, it wasn't a bit. I wanted to do push-ups, and I'm like, this is a good cause for me to also just start doing push-ups. So yeah, I sent it to you. Seriously, I sent it to Matt too. He's like, no, it could happen.
Matt should get on board.
He should,
unless he's afraid.
He has back issues and blah blah blah
blah blah blah.
But so first 20 I did this morning. I'm like, all right, okay, hey, this isn't too bad. I haven't done this in a while. This is pretty good. The second 20, you know, maybe like an hour and some change later, I'm like, okay, yeah, a little slower. I'm like, if as long as I do them, you know, I spread them out further, it'll be fine. And then by the time I was doing 60 to 80, I was like, ow, oh no, my tricep is not doing what I want it to do. And then the 80 to 100, I was like, okay, you know what? Let me change my stance and start using my chest a little bit more on this piece. And so I don't know how I'm gonna do. I may injure myself, but if I do, I'll do maybe more runs. we weren't gonna talk about run, so I can't.
Yeah, we never will speak of running again until my next marathon or Brandon's half marathon. Push-ups. We're gonna do the push-ups. My arms feel okay right now. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to try and keep up with this throughout the month. If anybody is listening and wants to take on the challenge as well, let us know.
We'll put you in the spreadsheet if you want.
Yeah, let's just add columns. That's fine. We can do that. That's not a problem. We'll send you the spreadsheet.
Yeah, yeah. We'll link it to you. Yeah. It'll be great. And it'll all be for a good cause. And then we'll put it out on Twitter. And then St. Jude will be like, oh my God, I love all of you. I love you so much.
Why didn't you officially sign up so that we could raise money?
Why didn't you actually give us money? The push-ups don't mean as much as the actual money. I'll donate some money as well.
Okay. 3,000 push-ups in the month of May. We're doing that. cool. So that's, we're going to be so fit. We're like our summer beach bodies when we're in California for, or in San Diego for Comic-Con. It's like, oh, ooh, man, ooh, we're going to be so fit and our arms are going to be so sore. Just walking around La Jolla, just we're gonna have rippled triceps.
We're gonna have such skinny legs from running. and like I'm not gonna do any different push-ups, right? It's all just gonna be like this one bicep and the outside of my chest. That's all it's gonna be.
Yeah. This is fine. This is gonna
my nipples are like if only the muscle on the outside gets, so like I guess they'll point in. My goal is to have my nipples like get like,
you're gonna have cross-eyed like, touch nipples. Each other. Just okay, cool. I look forward to that, I guess. All right, let's move on from our weird bodies and let's talk about a show that I wanted to talk about with Brandon last week, but he hadn't really checked it out. The show has been around and circulating for a little bit now on a little network called Freevee. That's right. This is the inaugural mention of the Freevee streaming service on any Apathetic Enthusiasm podcast. But yeah, this is a show called Jury Duty. Came out several weeks ago and kind of was slow in gaining in popularity, but caught on by a lot of people. And I thought it was just a really interesting concept and wanted to get your take on it, Brandon. Yeah. Basically, the idea is that somebody has signed up to be part of a documentary that is covering the jury process in the United States, right? So from getting called for a jury all the way through jury selection, through an actual case, and the verdict, what life is like for jurors, both in the courtroom and outside of the courtroom. They were going to follow and interview this jury for a documentary. What the one individual in the show doesn't know is that everybody that they interact with are actors. None of it is real. It is all staged and for the most part, like loosely scripted. And by the end of it, it is revealed that it has all been one big con, I guess.
One big ploy. Yeah. So I think that the beginning part of that intro talking about like, oh, juries across, this is how juries work, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's, you know, that's boring to me in general. But and then it gets into the unscripted part and it's like, one person who's unwittingly part of this whole thing. Now, you ask me my thoughts on it. And so I watched an episode and it's not that it's a bad show. And I think you'll talk a little bit more about why you think it's better than what I'm going to talk about, which is the Joe Schmo Show was a thing that existed mid 2000s, our buddy producer,
early aughts, yeah, as the teens are saying,
our mentor and sometimes producer funder of the show, Bob Carroll, was the one who introduced me to the Joe Schmo Show. And the whole Joe Schmo Show thing was like, it was all about like a real world road rules type of thing.
It was kind of bachelor-esque.
Yeah, that,
right,
that
like too, yeah. it was like a date, like reality dating. They had like the mansion and all these weird couple like trying to like do like dating type stuff.
Yeah. Or like Big Brother. It was like more Big Brother-ish, I think. Right.
Sure. Okay.
And so Joe Schmo, I don't remember the guy's name, but he was the unwitting guy. Now in that series, like I enjoyed the heck out of it when I was watching it. And then the second season rolled around and I still liked it. And I guess there was a third season. Doesn't matter. But, at the end of the show, and they reveal it to him and all that good stuff, they had an after show maybe a little bit later, or they interviewed him maybe a couple years later. And he was so upset about the whole thing. He was actually upset that he's like, you know, you're the butt of the joke, basically. And everyone's making, like, they're not making fun of you, but like everyone's having fun at your expense and your reactions and all that type of stuff. So after that, I've always had this sense of, I don't want to laugh at people. I don't want people to have that feeling. I don't want them to feel like, oh, you were making fun of me, right? So right. Now yeah. Jury Duty comes out. I watched the episode. This dude is just like a normal guy, and he's interacting with progressively stranger things. And I was like, I couldn't get the taste of Joe Schmo out of the back of my mind as I was watching it. Now, you're going to talk to me about why you think this show is different from maybe the meaner spirited bit of Joe Schmo.
Yeah, and I think the lingering effects of the Joe Schmo show and other iterations and types of, you know, creation like this initially turned me off to the premise as well. I remembered the Joe Schmo show. I didn't watch it like thoroughly. Like, I don't think I watched any subsequent seasons or even a full season of that show. But the idea of just a really long hidden camera practical joke on a person just didn't really appeal to me that much. And so while I saw advertisements and things coming out about Jury Duty, I am fascinated by the premise of a lot of people all working together to try and pull off a very difficult event, and staging a television show where things are going crazy and all these actors have to coordinate and collaborate, and you have to do that for like a couple weeks and not let on to a person that none of this is real. That to me is fascinating, but at the same time, I'm like, it sucks for the guy that's like, haha, we fooled you, right? And one of the actors in the show, and the only person who's relatively famous in the show, is James Marsden. He plays himself in the show, which I thought was pretty interesting to begin with. He plays James Marsden, who gets called in for jury duty, and he plays a version of himself that is very egotistical and is a stereotypical Hollywood type who is like super like about himself and about getting special treatment and all of these things.
And for those who don't know who James Marsden is, don't start with X-Men. You never start with Cyclops from X-Men. He was in a Notebook, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, he was the other guy.
He's the other guy in the Notebook. He's in the Sonic.
He's in Enchanted.
In the Sonic movies.
He's in the Sonic movies.
He's in Westworld.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, you were in Westworld?
Yeah. But I saw an interview online with James Marsden, and he was talking about when he made the decision to participate in the show. And one of the things he said is he didn't want to do the show if the main guy was going to be the butt of the joke. He was fine with all of these other things happening around him, but they really wanted to make the show about like how this guy is a good guy and how he is sort of the hero of the story, right? And so and I think throughout the show, as you watch it, that becomes evident where it's less about, and I'm sorry, I want to get his name out there. Ronald Gladden plays himself, right? So Ronald is the only guy that doesn't know that this is a TV show, but he is interacting with everyone throughout the course of the jury. He has made the what is it called? Like when you're in charge of the jury,
like
the
prime jury, I don't know.
Jury prime juror.
Dread. He's Dread.
Yeah. The foreman. Jury foreman, is that I think what it's called. Anyway, so he's like, he's having to deal with all these weird scenarios, and it is kind of a cool like slice of life how he deals with it. But the guy is such a good dude, and he handles things so well. He's very kind to everybody, and he's supportive of other people, and he wants to do a good job. He takes it very seriously. And so it's a really interesting concept to me. And I thought it was really entertaining. I thought it was a cool idea.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
James Marsden is he's good in the show. He's willing to really make himself look awful for the sake of the show. And all of the other actors are phenomenal too, and I think they do a really great job.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things about the series is the final episode, which is after they reveal that it was all, you know, a ruse. They kind of go behind the scenes and show how they revealed everything to Ronald, right? So instead of it ending with like, haha, this was fake, roll credits, that final scene kind of pulls back the curtain on everything, shows all of the work that went into it, shows interviews with the cast and crew about all the things they had to do, the times they messed up and then had to cover up and kind of redirect or correct course in that. So I think all of that's really interesting too. Turns out the cast is all like still really close and they like hang out and still keep in touch, which I think is awesome as well. And overall, it's a short series that is on Freevee, so it doesn't cost you any money to watch it. But if you haven't seen Jury Duty, I mean, I would encourage people to at least check it out.
Yeah,
because
I think so.
The guy does, at least what we see on camera, does not seem upset about the situation. I think the way that they handled it in the reveal, it really does a good job of taking that idea of like, haha, we got you. And instead really being like, you were awesome, regardless of what we threw at you, you were still genuine and you were the hero of the story. Thank you for doing that. And like, I don't know, he seems to take it really well. So
yeah,
I don't know. It's a cool idea to me.
The Nathan Fielder show that was on HBO, right? The rehearsal. Yeah. There's, I always think about this when we're looking at people on reality shows and the things that they say or that they do. And I think about the rehearsal. I think of this the episode where Nathan Fielder, who that show we talked about on AE before, he's like, his whole thing is like he's rehearsing he prepares rehearsals for real life situations for people who are like may have social anxiety or whatever. But then it turns into a meta thing about him rehearsing to better himself. Anyway, so there's one episode of that show where he's like taking an acting class or something like that. But then he does a rehearsal for the acting class. And in that rehearsal of the acting class, he also shows the behind the scenes of what he did leading up to that point in time. And it's about like people like the actors who were budding actors that were in the acting class originally were signing like release notes, like, are you going to be on camera? Are you going to be on camera and stuff like that? And because of that power differential, because someone is holding a contract in front of you and saying, hey, you're going to be on camera, then like they're more willing to do or say things that maybe they wouldn't normally be doing. And so I always think about that. So I think about like the Joe Schmo Show finale, going back to that real quick, not saying that the dude on the Jury Duty is angry about it or anything, but that dude who Greg pointed out was Matt Kennedy Gould, was what they showed on camera was him taking in good faith and be like, ooh, oh my God, all right, right? And then it sinks in over time. And that's when you start that he probably got bitter about it, like manipulated, felt stupid, felt like a joke. So, you know, I think that that's for me kind of where that comes in. But again, not saying jury duty guy is upset about it, but it's that power differential. You're on camera.
If Ronald comes out at any point in the future and says, "This sucked. I regret doing it. It was a horrible experience," and he's upset about it, I retract all of my earlier statements.
Okay. All right.
But until then, I enjoyed it. I think it's just funny. Like even if the show didn't have a person that didn't know they're acting in it, like I think some of the bits and things that they do are pretty comical.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely adds a layer to the comedy when you realize that somebody is expressing their true reactions to that sort of a scenario. And it's I don't know. I thought it was funny. Anyway, freebie, go watch Jury Duty.
Which is why we've been watching the hell out of Hot Ones.
Hot Ones is good too.
We've been binging the hell out of Hot Ones. This is a real quick aside. So Hot Ones is a show where celebrities go on and they're interviewed while they're eating 10 different hot wings of increasing.
If you don't know what Hot Ones are, you're not in the target demographic for this podcast. I'm almost sure of it.
I just have to say it just for anybody who maybe this is the first time they're tuning into Apathetic Enthusiasm. But so Hot Ones, yeah, interview show, celebrities. Increasingly
first we spicy. Feast. That's right.
And so what I find very, very interesting about that show, and I think I started watching it more with Pedro Pascal when he was on there. But like how people start, they seem so genuine. Most times they seem so genuine. And you almost get a good sense of, do I like this person as a person? When they start the show, because sometimes they go in there and they're not like, especially maybe like in the earlier seasons, they're like, what am I doing? Like my publicist wants me to be here. And so why am I eating hot wings? I don't even really want to.
I'm on a press tour. I have to plug this movie.
Yeah.
Why are there hot wings?
And some people like go in with a chip on the shoulder and then they leave with a chip on their shoulder. And I'm like, you know what? I guess I don't really necessarily like that person as much as I thought I did. But then there are some people who go in and then they start strong and then they end strong. And you're like, you know what? Thank goodness. Like that is that's what I thought that person was. So like Paul Rudd is the obvious one. Pedro Pascal is another one. Steve-O, that guy is just like, he's been through so much and he's just such a, like his stuff like made me cry because he's just like, he's just this genuinely sweet guy. And anyways, that show is very, very genuine and I love everything from it. So,
yeah, fantastic. I think it's just gotten better over time. I kind of want to try all of their sauces.
Oh, okay. The Fiery Chipotle. So who was it? Oh, Alton Brown was like, he ranked all of them. By the way, Alton Brown, just a sassy bitch that guy is. He's so confident. He's such a diva. He's such a kind of an asshole. But he knows what he's doing. He's a guy who like he knows that he knows more than you about whatever he's talking about, right? And he's not afraid to show it. But he ranked the Fiery Chipotle as the number one for that thing. And I believe it when he's like, yeah, this is number one, this one sucks, when he's like throws another bottle in the trash, right? That Fiery Chipotle, it is so good. I had it a couple weeks ago. Dude, yeah, it's solid, far out and right on, man.
Okay. Right on. Okay. Well, one of the issues that we might find ourselves in is shows like Jury Duty. Even shows like Hot Ones, potentially, probably not Hot Ones. Hot Ones should be fine.
You too. Are
at risk as of the recording of this episode, because as we speak, and I haven't seen any updates, I've been refreshing the Googles. The WGA, the Writers Guild of America, I think, is currently in negotiation still. Their contract expires tonight at midnight. which leads to the potential for yet another Hollywood writer strike that will happen tonight if they are unable to come to another agreement. So basically what that means, or for anybody that wasn't paying attention in like 2007, is
lost.
Yeah, you're lost right now. This means all of the people that work on or in the writers' rooms and develop the written material for some of our favorite shows and movies as well, they are going to go on strike, right? Many, if you're not familiar with what it's like to be a writer for television, especially, a lot of these people are not on like a hired salary, or they may only have a contract for a brief period of time with a series, but for the most part, they're almost like gig workers, right? That are moving from job to job, from writer's room to writer's room, mm-hmm. project to project. And so they are a union, right? They the Writers Guild of America is a union that helps protect these workers and tries to, you know, lobby on their behalf and all of those sorts of things. And one of the situations they're facing right now, yeah, it has to do with streaming, right? Streaming is huge. Streaming is everywhere. And the residuals that a lot of writers get when content that they work on moves to streaming is very low, right? So if you work on, say, a network television show, and that show goes into reruns or it's played again, residual checks for that can be as much as like 50% of what you made on the original episode. It varies, right? But for a lot of these shows, when they move to streaming, sometimes those residual checks drop down to like 5% or less, right? So the writers are getting very little residual money that they use to kind of fill that gap between projects.
Yeah.
And with the popularity of streaming, it's really affecting the writer's business. So that's sort of the situation we find ourselves in, is that they're trying to get
They're trying to get paid for the work that they do. I mean, at the core of it, that's really all it is, right? Streaming, movies, television. The fact is that there are people who write these things, and there are people who are executives, people at the top, all these folks that are making a shit ton of money off of the work of, you know, gaffers and writers and directors and artists and all this stuff, right? And well, I know some writers, and they're like, they're struggling. They're like, they have to put so much work in so much effort and so much heart into writing scripts, writing shows, writing anything, for it to just be like, all right, cool, let's I don't know, I'm give you $3,500 and then maybe, and then it goes into the back of nothing, right? Right. And like, even like I think about this too, which is like, I think about like IMDb, for example, where actors, people who work on shows, like behind the scenes, like building sets and stuff like that, like they can be working on a project for so long, and then that shit gets scrapped. And so now, like, we talk about like putting stuff on resumes for jobs. You can't put those things on resumes because it's a project that wasn't seen to completion. And because you maybe put 2 years of your life into a project, well, you can't put that on there. Like, so what have you been doing for 2 years? Well, I mean, I was working on some stuff. Oh, what?
Untitled didn't project. Actually go into production. And I think there's a misconception, because I think I was guilty of this for a long time. And you know, on our other podcast, Interdimensional RSS, we talk about writers all the time. We've had writers on the show. And when we talk about some of the people in the writer's room, we think about if you think about Dan Harmon or something, right? Like, he's not just a writer. Like, he's an executive producer. He's a co-creator, right? He's pulling in a lot more money on the success of these projects than a person that it's their first year in the writer's room, or somebody that's like trying to move up. Like the people that are writing a lot of the content for some of your favorite shows, they are not these Hollywood elites that live glamorous lifestyles necessarily, right? They're people that are putting in work and putting in a lot of creative work, but it's still tough to make it. And we're talking about California. Everything's expensive there, it's not easy to live.
The cost of living is exorbitant. And, you know, you talk about Rick and Morty writers, Rick and Morty writers in the writer's room, talking about Dan Harmon. If you go on a Twitter and you follow a certain amount of Rick and Morty writers, ex-writers for the show, they're some of the ones who are talking about this writer's strike right now. So like Sarah Carbiner, she's one of them, a person who's been pretty adamant about the writer's strike. And, she co-wrote the Vindicators episode. So, in the Vindicators web series, right? That was another thing. Yep. So
what is a writer's strike? For those of you again that didn't experience it a decade and a half ago, what does that potentially mean? Initially,
we're going to be watching a lot of reruns.
There will be reruns. The problem is on streaming, we already kind of watch a lot of reruns.
True.
But I think the shows that will be most affected by it first are going to be shows like late night television, those sorts of show, like the late night talk shows, the shows that require the writing to be done very quickly, right? You think about late night talk shows, the monologues for Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, you know, Stephen Colbert. There's a team of writers that help put that together. And if they're on strike, nobody's writing those jokes tomorrow. And so many of those jokes are topical, or they're about news that's happening that day or the day prior. There's nobody write those jokes. So obviously you can have an interview and you can have some of those things, but it kind of cripples those shows right away. And then beyond that, there's Netflix executives and executives from other streaming services that are talking about the fact that they have a bit of a stockpile of scripts that are already done or that have already been turned in for either existing shows or new concepts or shows where they can draw from that well to try and keep producing some television. But the reality is, if they weren't already greenlighting those scripts, how good are they going to be? Like, how long can you use that, like, before you're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel for content?
Well, so Peace Among Ricks saying, so a show like Rick and Morty won't see the effects of a strike for a year or more. What I'd say about that, so as far as like animation goes, they write for a long time. They write a lot of episodes. And then eventually they have to do the animation. So the animation takes a long time. So I would almost say that for like an animated series, we know that Rick and Morty is already like, they're in the middle of like writing season 8. They were in the middle of writing season 8. So if we're going to see any effects on like that show, it'll probably be, you know, like 2 years from now. That's when it'll be affected, if at all. But the strike will have been ended by that point in time. And you know, they'll have gone back and Harmon, I think, is anal enough to be like, all right, we're past that. Now let's fix the scripts that we're jacked up or half ass or like we had to stop for it. I think animation is not immune from it, but is kind of like maybe padded a little bit more because of just the nature of how long it takes for animation.
Yeah. That's a great point. I think, and we talked about Lost earlier, Lost was affected by that, like, was it 2007 writer's strike?
Yeah.
How long did that writer's strike last? Because I feel like it lasted like a couple months. I don't know. I'm going to Google it.
I don't remember. But so for those who are not Lost watchers, Lost was on for 6 years. The third season of Lost, was it the third season? Yeah, it was like the third season, right?
It felt like it was the third season.
The third season of Lost was not the best season. As a matter of fact, it was like the most panned season of the show because of the writer's strike. And I think maybe like the first half or the first or second half was worse. And you know, like that was a result of like, well, we have to keep putting out episodes. We got to keep the money rolling into ABC. So let's do episodes like, what is this main character's tattoo? What's the history behind this main character's tattoo? Let's go back in time and look, explore the history of Jack's tattoo. That's right. Stranger in a Strange Land.
Yeah.
Season three.
Yeah, there was some rough stuff. So the 2007-2008 strike was resolved after 3 months. But yeah, it definitely affected some shows. It resulted in some weird episodes. Certain shows just got straight up canceled because they couldn't outlast the strike.
And I also think this is a factor of it too, separate from animation, which is in live action television, there's also those active rewrites that are going on as the show is being produced. And so like my brother-in-law does like some of that stuff is like ADR, like some line changes. Oh, this needs to get changed. This needs to get shifted around. You can do that a lot easier. Well, you can do that in live action. You're like, oh, we need a rewrite. Let's shoot the scene differently, whatever. Well, if you're in a writer's strike, well, the actors are just writing what they were given at the time.
yeah.
In post-production, all that happy shit.
I'm a little curious because, I mean, unless there's some last minute deal that gets brokered, it looks like this may be inevitable that there is a strike. Because of the difference in the landscape of television in 2023 compared to what it was in 2007, I'm very curious how long this could go on, or I guess just how resolute each side is going to be in maintaining the status quo or advocating for change. Because when you think about 2007, the biggest shows on television were on ABC. Like they were on network television. Even cable wasn't like at the level that like with some of the hits that HBO has had in recent years and things like that. We're talking pre Game of Thrones, you know, like any of that. Right. And so streaming wasn't even really a concept. You rented your Netflix by having them mail DVDs to you like that. That was where we were at way back then. And so with names like Netflix, these major streaming services having a little bit more input into the landscape of television, how confident are they going to be that they can ride this out, or that they can continue to make content or rely on existing content that's already in their services to keep people engaged or keep people watching their services, waiting out these writers? So I think there is potential that it could last even longer, depending on how shows are affected. There's a lot of unknowns.
For sure. Well, you mentioned it. This might have been the point that you're getting at, was the streaming not a huge big deal. Like TiVo was how we streamed back in the
DVRs. Set your DVR.
Right.
That was about what we had.
But now, like the content that you got back in the day was NBC, ABC, Fox, UPN, WB, maybe MTV, maybe these cable channels, HBO, Skinamax, you know, Red Shoe Diaries.
like we're not even talking like Breaking Bad. Like Breaking Bad wasn't even
right.
But so many shows that we think back now is like these major cultural events.
But that the content of all of those things, that's what we were affected by. And there was they almost had more of a stockpile of stuff that they could, you know, reach out and grab onto. The speed and the quantity of material that they're putting out all the time, a new show, a new series. You go to Netflix, there's like a new series every week that they are producing, that they're putting out, and you're never going to watch all of them, but they're still pushing out that content, right? It almost, you know, maybe they don't have as much of a stock, but they're going to burn through that stockpile if they have to. And which means that they're going to have to come to a resolution, and then they're going to start digging into the shows that weren't written that well. They're like, well, we got to make a show out of it anyways. Brandon's Menagerie, where he goes to thrift stores and looks at the shoes, and he's looking for a new pair of Vans. By the way, the last pair of Vans I bought from a Goodwill, I still wear them. They're great. That's not the point. The point is, that's this type of shit that they'll green light, and then everyone will be like, just pay the writers their money.
Yeah. I for one hope that the writers get what they deserve, and they that came out wrong. I hope they get paid, right? I hope they get what's coming to them. Oh, so help me.
Oh no, Joaquin Phoenix, you get what you fucking deserve.
Hopefully they can come to the resolution on this quickly, and because we love our writers and we love good stories and we love all the content. It's like half the crap we talk about is content that writers
great,
put out in the
great
world,
writers so. Man, great writers do amazing things, and then great actors take that and elevate it even more. I like my favorite writer of all time, television writer of all time. You know his name, Travis, Rod Serling.
I was gonna say Jeff Loveness.
I didn't like Quantumania that much, so no, I don't count it. But
right, well, that's our show, everybody.
the Twilight Zone. Like he did a majority of the 156 episodes of the Twilight Zone. Like he wrote those stories, and like he had emotion in there. He had passion. He had a message. Social injustice, trying to make the world a better place. And like a good writer, that those stories will stand the test of time. And like I'm still talking about the Twilight Zone, obviously, because like it's become a part of who I am. And so I think good writers do that. And so I think that's why we should support the arts.
There you go. Well, that I think is going to do it. Support the arts, support yourself doing pushups, support your civic duty. If you get called for jury duty,
that's right.
And, go for a run, do all those things.
And then if you want to do pushups with us, make sure you send us a message on Twitter or, our email at apatheticenthusiasmshow@gmail.com. Do those things and we'll put your
we'll add you to the spreadsheet.
We'll send you a link and we'll add you to the spreadsheet. 100 pushups a day. And if you don't want to do 100 pushups a day, any amount of pushups a day will be good. And you know what? I'll for any extra person that does pushups with us, I'll donate a little bit of extra money.
What a guy.
Like a dollar or two extra per person. I'm not going to tell you the exact amount because then you're going to hold me to it and you're like, and I can't afford that much money.
Yeah. Yeah. All of a sudden it just, we have the biggest response we've ever had from this podcast.
Yeah. Like, hey Brandon, you're obligated to 200 grand. What?
Not possible. Anyway, that's our show. Thank you so much for watching. If you are watching live on Twitch, stick around for the Twitch post show. And if you miss the post show or you're not available on Monday nights, you can go to patreon.com/apatheticenthusiasm for video of the post show. Until next week, I am Travis.
And I am Brandon. And thank you so much for paying attention to us.
Bye.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.